Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Really good stuff from Mario Cristobal. If you missed any of that, grab the podcast. Appreciate everybody who makes this radio show part of the day. Every year, I keep a list of the 25 most influential people in the state of Oregon when it comes to sports. And it's a running list. I've even got next year's list already started, compiling names. And usually there's about 100 people that end up in serious consideration. Our next guest not only made the list, but ranked high, top five. When we're talking about influence in the state, became one of the most powerful voices in the Pac-12 conference when it came to the continuation of play and the possibility of the Pac-12 season being postponed. Dr. Doug Aukerman mattered when it came to that, shared his expertise, shared his knowledge, Senior Associate Athletic Director of Sports Medicine at Oregon State, and the good doctor is joining us now. I appreciate you making time for us, Dr. Aukerman.
Well, thanks for having me on, John. I appreciate the opportunity.
Let's start kind of with your background, and then we'll get into the testing stuff and what you know there, and maybe help some of us understand and make it easier to sort of grasp. But you know, you're an avid runner. You've got a background in sports. Was this, like, when you were a kid, did you say, I want to be a doctor and I want to be associated with college athletics? Was this or was this Forrest Gump-like, where you sort of found yourself there and looked up one day and said, hey, this is where I ended up?
That's a great question. I always wanted to be in the medical side of things. I my father is a physician and a role model for me. But I, at the same time, saw the work ethic and how hard it is and how much work it is to be a doctor. And so I initially went the route of athletic training and was a student athletic trainer at Vanderbilt University. And during that, realized that the athletic trainers work just as hard. following my undergraduate work, decided to go on to medical school. And at that point, I knew for sure I wanted to do sports medicine from the time I was an athletic trainer or a student athletic trainer.
How much at Oregon State now, you know, a lot of what we see in sports medicine and the advancement is probably not what people were doing 20, 30, 4 years ago, maybe not even 5 years ago. Where have the advancements been made in just your time?
Well, in sports medicine, there's just so many advancements. You think about all the advances that we and all the information that we've learned around concussions. I mean, I've been a sports medicine physician now for over 20 years, and you know, you think about 2000, what we were doing for concussion management. It's very, very much different than what we're doing now in 2020. Musculoskeletal ultrasound and some of the diagnostic tests that we have the ability to do were in their infancy back in 2000 when I first started. So it clearly has continued to change and develop as everything in medicine does. You know, one of my instructors back in medical school said, you know, you're going to learn in this class this topic, and half of what I'm going to tell you is going to be proven not to be true anymore in the future. But what you have to do is be able to try and figure out what that is and always be questioning and always be investigating and always be trying to look critically at the information at hand.
I was in Las Vegas. Pac-12 basketball tournament is going on. Everything gets shut down, and suddenly the sports world is at a halt. It had to be surreal for you because this was not just, hey, you're off for a while. Now everybody turns to you and goes, what does it mean? What do we do? How involved can you be? How crazy did your world get back in March and since then?
Yeah, it got real crazy in March, and it's stayed crazy ever since. It's shocking to me that we're in September because I feel like the summer never happened as far as it concerned me, because I really never had a lot of downtime this summer. And typically that's the time to recharge before you head back into the fall sports seasons. I'm lucky to be part of the Pac-12, and I'm really lucky that the Pac-12 for the last 5 or 6 years has had a really well-established medical community through the Student Athlete Health and Wellbeing Initiative that was formed by the CEO and AD group back in 2014. And so we already had a well-knit group of athletic trainers, team physicians, orthopedic surgeons, and we were able to really harness that and pivot and be able to add some additional expertise in as it relates to coronavirus.
We're talking to Dr. Doug Aukerman. I had him as the number two most influential person in the state of Oregon. Do you feel like the second most influential person behind the governor?
Not at all. I appreciate the recognition of the work that's been done. I think I think I'm far too high on that list that you've got me there, if I belong on that list at all.
No, I just think it's such an interesting year. And I know everyone says it's a weird year, but I do find myself going, okay, what does Dr. Aukerman say about this? And looking through sort of the Pac-12 reports and the slides and trying to make sense of it all. I've got a number of questions for you that relate to coronavirus, but myocarditis, let's start with that. It feels like everybody nationally is all over the map on this. And even within our region, some people think this is really something to be concerned about. Other people are saying, no, they're still playing in the S. What, help us understand why myocarditis is important to pay attention to.
Sure. As with a lot of things with coronavirus, this is a novel virus, and we are learning weekly, daily, and monthly about its effects on the short term and long term on our human body. The initial reports on myocarditis and cardiac damage and cardiac challenges were always in older people that were very sick, that were in the ICU or hospitalized for a long period of time. And so we didn't think it was too relatable to a young, healthy individual exercising. But as we continue to monitor that and continue to monitor the pulmonary findings or lung findings, we started seeing case reports pop up of student athletes or other athletes coming up with this myocarditis, this inflammation in the heart. And that then became concerning because some of them were people who were asymptomatic. We don't really know is what is the long-term effect. And, we don't also know how often it's going to be. And so somebody used an analogy of if you have a bucket of 100 ping pong balls and there's red ones and white ones, and if you draw a red one out, then you have some permanent long-term consequences. If you pull a white one out, if you get the illness, then you're fine. We don't know how many of those red balls are in there. And so to be able to give good guidance to our student athletes, we have to be able to tell them what we know and what we don't know. And at this point, we still don't know what could potentially be the long-term consequences. And the great thing is that, there's a group of cardiologists and folks within our conference as well as other conferences that have started a national registry to try and track student athletes who have had COVID and then also track to see if there are any long-term complications from the cardiac point of view.
Our guest, Dr. Doug Aukerman, he is a senior associate athletic director at Oregon State, and obviously a prominent role in the Pac-12's decision-making in the last few months. We listened to the presidents and chancellors, and Michael Schill in particular at Oregon, who came out and said, you know, these are student-athletes. We care about them. I'm curious, with the questions you get from the CEO group, it appeared to me that the presidents and chancellors really did view the football players, the athletes in other sports, as students first. And maybe that isn't consistent across all of college, but maybe can you just talk a little bit about the questions you got from the presidents and chancellors, and maybe we can understand where they're coming from?
I think, you know, the really the questions that we were posed with were to make recommendations and guidance based off of where we are in this pandemic, and then what are the things that we know and what are the things that we don't know with any sort of certainty, and is there a way to move forward in a safe manner? And, you know, I get a lot of credit and I've given a lot of attention for what our COVID advisory and student athlete health well-being board has done. But, you know, I am the fortunate or maybe unfortunate person to be the chair of that group. And so I end up being the spokesman of the group. And so it's not just my opinion that I'm talking about. It's not just my expertise. It's I'm relying on 27 brilliant people and their comments and their feedback as we've gone through this process. And, you know, we started out really developing a framework on how can we exercise safely in the middle of a pandemic, right? You have a disease that is not under control, that we don't have a treatment for, and is pretty infectious and can spread pretty easily. And we were charged with how do we set up with a framework for those athletes to be able to come out and practice and do it safely. We were concerned very early on about how can we ensure that same amount of safety when we get to the point where we have to move into contact activity, where people can't socially distance and we have to basically disregard the CDC and the health department's recommendations for what is keeping all of us safe in this country. And we really struggled coming up with, you know, is there a feasible way to do that truly safely without taking a lot of chances?
The new rapid results testing and the partnership with the private entity Quidel, how is that a game changer?
Well, it helps us with, you know, with the questions that we were struggling with before, is how do we make sure that the student athlete steps on the practice field and the coaching staff that is in close contact with the athletes steps onto that practice field and or on the competition field or court in a state that we are reasonably sure they do not have levels of COVID that are infectious or can spread. And, you know, the PCR test, the real-time polymerase chain reaction test, which are the traditional laboratory tests we've had up to this point, have a delay time from the time you actually take the sample to the time you get the result. And so when you take that sample, let's say we take a sample today on Tuesday and send that off, it may be Wednesday or Thursday or Friday before we get that result back. When we get that result back, say it's Thursday, that does not reflect the current state of what that individual is in on Thursday. It reflects what they were like on Tuesday. And so what we felt that we really needed is a rapid test, a rapid turnaround test where you take the test Tuesday, you get the result Tuesday, and then you know what the current state of that individual is when they step onto the field or court.
So we're talking about faster turnaround times, not having to quarantine as many athletes, and maybe having greater certainty that the athletes that are out on the field are virus-free, which allows you to breathe a little easier out there. With that in mind, how confident are you? Because I think, you know, these test equipment is going to be delivered here by the end of the month. And how confident are you that Lane County, Benton County, the governor's office, health officials, that they'll that will satisfy them so that practices can begin? Because that's the next step, isn't it? That now you can practice. Okay, it's okay. We've got enough data. Or we had enough time knowing that we can, you know, prevent outbreaks, widespread outbreaks. How confident are you that the health officials will be satisfied by this?
We've had great dialogue with our county health officials here in Benton County, and I know my counterparts at University of Oregon have had very open and good communication with the county health department in Lane County. And you know, I think I'm optimistic that we will get to a point where we can show them what our protocols are going to be and what our plan is going to be that reassures the state that we're going to be conducting this in a safe manner to be able to get permission. And I'm optimistic that that'll happen. Obviously, we have to get there. But again, it's been very collaborative up to this point, and I don't see why we cannot find a way forward with that decision.
Can you run through kind of the mechanics of that? Like Oregon State, for example, will get the equipment at the end of the month. What happens next?
So, you know, the we have to get the equipment. We have to get the tests. The tests are going to be done daily. And that's important because if you talk about antigen tests by themselves, and you talk about PCR tests by themselves, there's no question that the PCR test is more sensitive and picks up lower, you know, picks up people who have COVID infection at a much lower, you know, lower rate of COVID viral load than the antigen test does. But all the mathematical models and theoretical models show that if you can take a test that has less sensitivity and do it frequently, do it daily, do it every other day, that your outcomes and performance of that test end up being much, much better. And come close to what a PCR test done on a frequent basis or a rapid turnaround test would be. So, you know, we will be, you know, doing testing daily. If it's 5 days or 6 days a week, we'll be doing testing likely in the mornings and getting a result back prior to the student athletes being able to practice. And so we haven't talked with the coaches in our here at Oregon State in detail yet, but, you know, likely we'll be doing the tests early in the morning, and while they then go to their, you know, breakdown meetings and film session, and by the time they get done with that, we should have those test results and then know that everybody can go ahead and participate and practice that day.
Our guest, Dr. Doug Aukerman, Oregon State senior deputy athletic director in charge of sports medicine. Obviously a central figure in the Pac-12 advisory group and the decision-making that's been going on. Is this something that could be parlayed into the general student body, into the private sector, that, you know, companies will begin doing this? Or is this just something we do with college athletics for now and then figure the rest out later?
I think, you know, the hope is with these antigen tests or point-of-care tests or even home tests, is that they are accurate enough that they can be, and cheap enough that they can be deployed on a widespread basis. And, you know, part of the relationship with Quidel and the Pac-12 conference is to do some research to look at the feasibility of doing this widespread on asymptomatic individuals and you know, be able to get a test run to say, okay, how would this, could be this deployed for a school, or how could this be deployed for club sports or rec sports?
Yeah, I hear a lot of that, and I hear people saying, you know, all right, that's great, this is great, good for the athletes, but if, you know, if you want to be on campus in person, that would be the next sort of evolution of this. Is this economically feasible? I know the partnership helps with that, but I have no concept of what does this cost or what does a testing format like this cost? I know the NBA was doing stuff inside the bubble that others said, hey, would not be feasible in college athletics. Is the partnership vital to that, or are you privy to that sort of economic
I'm not
framework?
Privy to the economic piece of it. If you look at point-of-care testing, even if we said, you know, the market price for a Quidel test is, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 to $30, and you look at some of the other tests that have recently come out, maybe $5 a test, and you compare that to a PCR test, which is ranging somewhere between $100 to $120 per test. You can do a lot of point-of-care rapid tests for the cost of one or two PCR tests. And to be able to have that rapid turnaround is really, really promising. You know, certainly with the antigen testing and when used as a screening test like we're going to, you know, when we do get a positive, we'll need to follow it up with a confirmatory test. And so we'll still be using PCR, just hopefully less frequently.
You know, Doctor, in our household, distance learning started today with the elementary school kids. And I've got a senior in high school as well. And she's home in distance learning. And, you know, we're all kind of hopeful that there will be there'll be a light at the end of the tunnel. How long do you feel like we're all going to be dealing with this, with a vaccine in mind, with sort of, you know, this is kind of in your realm of expertise, but how long are we going to be dealing with this? How long will this be a subject for radio and you in the top 25 and the whole thing?
Well, hopefully by next year, I'll drop so far out of the top 25, I won't even be on the mention list. and what I say by that is hopefully, you know, we get control of this virus across the country and we're able then to effectively manage it. Because quite honestly, in many, many parts of our country, they're still just out of control spread. And we do not have mitigation efforts and control in many, many areas. We're really lucky within Oregon and Oregon State, Benton County, that our metrics and our kinetics of this virus are so good. I mean, the numbers are so low. And so I hope we have that. I hope we have a vaccine. I don't know if we will or not. It seems awful quick to have a vaccine by then, if we look at the traditional time it takes to get a vaccine ready. But I hope that we have one, and I hope we also develop some treatments to help decrease or shorten the severity of the illness for those that get it, much like we have for influenza. But this is a novel virus, and if you would have asked me, you know, in April or May, would we still be dealing with this to this degree in September, and I would have told you no. And so I don't hazard to guess what this virus is going to do over the next 3 months or the next 12 months. And I think we'll continue to follow it. I think Dr. Fauci said, you know, we don't control the virus or we don't tell the virus when it's done. It tells us. And I think that's probably very true. I think we're going to have to watch it. And you know, it's going to be really telling what happens with influenza season being overlapped with COVID this fall, in the next 3 to 4 months, and hopefully everybody out there listening gets a flu shot so they can help us all out in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are sort of looking at the calendar and just trying to figure out, all right, where is normal going to be? Show me where it is and I can get there. You know, it's like, you know, you're a runner, right? You know, if I don't tell you you're running a marathon today, and you just start running, you keep looking at me going, how much further are we going? How much? That's kind of what I feel like. And have you always been into the running?
When I met my wife back when I was at Wake Forest doing my fellowship program, she was into running, and she's actually the more accomplished runner compared to myself. But I got into running, and I haven't been able to run very much here in the last several months because of the number of meetings and the workload with COVID, and now with all this wildfire smoke outside, I don't think I'd want to run outside currently because of the air quality. I think that overall, we'll really have to kind of watch how this thing goes.
Yeah, and once the equipment for testing is in place, do you have a sense on how much data, what is the sample size, how long that will take in order to feel that you're reasonably confident that you can move forward and then all of a sudden we've got daylight at that point? Do you have a sense on how much time these individual programs need and how much data you need before you feel confident?
Well, that's a great question. I think, we got to make sure that it's feasible to actually get these tests done every single day, that we have the manpower and the resources to get it done. And I think we will, and I think we'll be well prepared and planned for that. At that point, doing some testing also with PCR to ensure that it is doing what we think and what we hope it's going to do. And then at that point, we do have a pathway forward towards feeling really comfortable that we are putting our athletes in a safe spot to go out and compete.
I also think, it's really interesting because at the beginning of this, so much has changed. And you talk about, this is a novel virus. The virus is in control. But if I could give you like a time machine where you could go in, a couple of years into the future, what is the answer that you'd most want? What would you want to know about this virus and what we would know 2 years from now?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see, are there long-term effects? You hear about these people called long haulers of COVID, people who've had COVID infection and it's taking them 4 months, 5 months, 6 months to get their lung function back. It's going to be really interesting to see those people that do have myocarditis or inflammation and then do have some fibrosis of that tissue. Do they end up having early development of heart failure 20, 30 years from now? Those are the things that we don't know. And that's why, our advisory group really felt it was critical that we do everything we can to make sure our student athletes are stepping onto the field free of this so they're not spreading it to each other on the field. And you just can't really do that with PCR unless you can get the test turnaround the same day.
I really appreciate your time. I do, I know that you're part of a committee. I know you're the spokesperson, but I think, you play an incredibly influential and important role in this. And I think, I just appreciate the work that you do. And I appreciate you coming on the show, Dr. Aukerman, to talk about it and share some of that expertise. Before you go, is there something that you'd want to impart on the general public? Is there some element of either the virus or the testing or the frustration out there? Hey, the SEC's playing. What do they know that the Pac-12 doesn't know? Is there anything you want to clear up that is a source of frustration maybe inside the Pac-12 medical community?
No, I hope everybody realizes that we all would love to be doing our jobs as team physicians, as athletic trainers, as orthopedic surgeons, covering the events and the practices and helping our athletes stay healthy, and when they get hurt, help them get back to competing again. That's what we want to do too. We would love nothing more than for us to be playing a regular season. But at the same time, I think, people have to realize that we've been able to try to remove the politics from it and just look at the science and look at the facts and realize that we are in a pandemic. I understand the frustration. Everybody wants to have sports back. Everybody wants to do it. But I think, to do it with the most amount of information we can have and to do it with putting the student-athlete health and safety as the number one priority has been really important. And I feel really grateful that this conference has been able to do that.
Dr. Aukerman, stay safe. I appreciate your expertise. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks so much.
There he is, Dr. Doug Aukerman, I'll take your feedback on that. What did you hear there? 503-417-7575. I've got thoughts. You share yours. What am I going to talk about? There's no games going on. What are you going to talk about? That's what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to get the doctor, who is the go-to when it came to the Pac-12 conference deciding to postpone their fall football season. Dr. Doug Aukerman did a terrific job in that interview. I thought he was concise. I thought he was clear. I thought he probably should have been the one out front talking instead of the conference commissioner. I thought he did a better job than the conference commissioner when it came to explaining what was going on and the protocol, or the, just much more relatable, we don't know. This is a novel virus. We're not sure. I'd love to know where we're going to be. I'd love to know the long-term health effects in 2 years. But here's where we are. Here's what I know now that I didn't know before. He is reasonably confident that the governor in Oregon and the health officials in Lane County and Benton County will see the rapid results test data that they're getting and feel confident that they can clear Oregon and Oregon State to practice. And that opens the door. Remember what Mario Cristobal said in his interview. He needs 8 or 9 weeks, 6 weeks at a minimum, but 8 or 9 weeks ideally to get his team playing the way that he wants them to play. That dovetails with this. Now we can start to formulate a timeline. If they're getting the equipment by the end of September, what are we talking about? Probably not October. Probably not until minimally late November for the start of a Pac-12 season, best case scenario. So we can kind of piece that together and go, you know, they probably could start playing in December without too much trouble. For those of you who believe that the Pac-12 conference is left behind, I would also, point out that I think the presidents and chancellors of the Pac-12 pretty much said that they are different than the other conferences. And so to that point, I don't know that they would necessarily be offended by people who say it's the Power Four and then the Pac-12 conference. Haven't been part of the playoff 5 times in 7 years. Haven't really mattered nationally outside of maybe Oregon or Washington in a given year that is considered a team that could make the playoffs. And I think they, when they made their decision to postpone the season, they were viewing the athletes as students. Like, knock me over with a feather. That happened in the Pac-12 conference. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying that's what they did. So I heard Dr. Aukerman there talk about the timeline, the confidence that he has that, that health officials in our state will clear Oregon and Oregon State to begin practicing. I heard him talk about the uncertainty of the future, the long-term health effects. You can kind of gather from that picture a sense that this rapid results testing really is a breakthrough, and it really is something that will help the health officials that are involved with keeping people safe and healthy on campus to, with reasonable confidence, turn to the government and the local and state health authorities and say, look, I think we got this under control. As long as we can test and have the rapid result testing, we got it under control. I also got a handle on kind of the figure of what it's going to cost. And it made me kind of feel like maybe the next evolution here, if you believe the presidents and chancellors really do view the athletes as students, that maybe the next step in this evolution is rapid result testing that would be part of the general campus student body experience, at least in the short term. It's all worth thinking about. Judah Newby, your quick takeaways from Dr. Aukerman's interview.
Well, it's good to hear him reinforce, like, just like all the medical experts, they want football to be played right now. It's not like they're against football being played. They want it to be played, but they've got the information. He's a very humble guy. You know, I've got to gently disagree with him, though. He is influential, whether he likes it or not. I mean, he is a top five influencer. I said earlier, John, that I thought he would be in your top five and possibly over the governor, but I really think that he broke it down well, but it just goes back. The X factor is rapid result testing. It really is. If these things are accurate, they're prompt, they work at whatever cost. I honestly don't care what the cost is, as long as the cost is, you know, affordable. If they can solve this, this has implications beyond the Pac-12 conference if it works.
Alabama, Adriana, your takeaway from the Dr. Aukerman interview.
I like what you said about how he should have been leading the conversation instead of Larry Scott. I just feel like what we got with him was so much more genuine and on a like human level than anything that we've gotten at all out of Larry since this all started happening.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, you know, he kind of deflected and said, I'm the spokesperson. I think you're right in saying that it was a human response, because what I heard there was, you know, he's a father, he's a husband, he's also part of a group of 27 physicians in the Pac-12 conference that are all looking at this. And I really did feel like if for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes there as we talked, I didn't expect the interview to go so long, but I just felt like he was really clear. He was really concise. I felt like, you know, even my question about the myocarditis, like, you know, why is everybody all over the place with this? And I think he talked very frankly about, look, like, this is a moving target. And remember back in March, it was, well, it's not airborne. Don't wear masks. You don't need to wear a mask. Only the medical professionals need a mask. And hand sanitizer was all the rage. Now, you know, look at where we are now to that point. It's like, you know, if you have a choice between a mask or hand sanitizer, people are grabbing the mask. So I think, you know, he's just talking about sort of the moving target.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.